Hello again. It's Michonne Neal, your resident gentleman goddess, and we're going to do yet another episode of Integrated Non-Monogamy. So, sit tight and yes, let this earworm fill you. All right, everyone, let's talk about a few reasons why cishet folks should not claim polyamory or non-monogamy as a type of queerness. Let's start with this way. First of all, yay for polyamory and non-monogamy, okay? It's been making the rounds, especially a lot more lately in shows and things, as the mainstream, which is, you know, straight, cis, and usually white, discover that love does not have to be as limiting and lonely as we've been told. I mean, hell, we finally just started discussing abuse culture a bit with all of these mostly rich white and some black guys. Comes out that they've been pretty shitty to a lot of people, not just women, but a lot of people. Okay, let's not forget, the guy from Everybody Hates Chris also spoke up about his sexual abuser. Of course, it was a rich white man. Anyway, point is, we're having a conversation now. We're discussing how to be more inclusive and less oppressive, and we're breaking down a mad normative assumptions, primarily around the idea that your partner belongs to you. More and more, people are learning about things like compersion, intimate friendships, and open and honest communication. And that's an absolutely great thing. Many of the tools and skills that people learn to hone while engaging in polyamory carry over into other aspects of life not remotely related to romance and sex. There's a lot of great potential within non-monogamous communities to truly revolutionize the way people tend to approach intimacy in general. It opens up conversations about the ways in which people meet their needs and can encourage people of any relationship orientation towards healthier behaviors. But a potentially troublesome trend has come along with all of this attention. Many cishet people keep claiming a queer identity rooted in the fact that you are polyamorous. Now here's why that most of the time is not cool. Even if it might seem like you're doing it out of solidarity. So first of all, it's inaccurate. Even though non-monogamy can be an inborn orientation, many of you choose to be non-monogamous. Much like the excitement over the wildly inaccurate 50 Shades of Grey, this discovery of a sexy, potentially exciting, exciting venture was likely presented to you through mainstream means. Perhaps you've read, you know, the usual suspects, Ethical Slut, More Than Two, or any of the other fairly popular books on non-monogamy. Maybe you read about this new trend in a magazine or some terrible HBO show. While it's great that there's such an influx of representation of non-monogamous relationships, you have to be wary about the fact that it's still not fully or even accurately representative of the diverse populations within non-monogamy. There is still a huge issue with retention of queer, black, poor, and disabled poly-A folk within, you know, community groups. Even books and fiction and movies that deal with polyamory, they present it as a choice that comes after the fact, after, you know, the folks are trying to be monogamous. Or it's usually brought up as some way to avoid, you know, commitment. Think about why that is. Even if we get to see a sort of happy ever after ending, we don't actually get to see any ongoing examples of fully healthy poly-A relationships. We don't get to see stories of people who grew up just organically and healthily poly-A. And we don't get to see those whose relationship orientation is actually inherent in the same way that their sexuality and or gender is. More specifically, outside of the Q-verse, diverse, healthy, queer and poly as orientation does not seem to exist in entertainment just yet. Given that the main representation is already mostly cis and straight and white people who've made a very clear decision to be non-monogamous, the P for poly-A doesn't quite make sense in the queer movement. Speaking of which, it erases those of us who actually are queer. Those of us who are both non-monogamous and queer find ourselves floating around in the background, while, you know, cis folks tend to get the attention. This is a serious problem. It's not something intentional, at least most of the time. It's just that, in efforts to make non-monogamy more palatable to the masses, it's much easier to get the idea past filters if the participants are otherwise quote-unquote normal. Since media and entertainment work the way they do, it necessarily means that us queers end up with the short end of the stick. Even worse, when you are straight and cis, claiming that your polyamory is queer completely obfuscates the meaning. It makes people who are queer in every other way much less visible. It centers, once again, heteropatriarchal values and experiences. Being queer in poly-A is a vastly different experience than being straight in poly-A. I mean, did you not even realize that our experiences differ? Well, you can keep this in mind. Much of cishet non-monogamy has more in common with monogamy plus, which is, yes, my term, monogamy plus. So, see, most straight people, they lead fairly straightforward lives. Or at least, they lead more recognizable lives, and they get more chances to kind of, you know, fuck up or explore weird shit, you know? They overlook it because you're, you know, mostly normal. Anyway, the point is, you don't really spend your lives fighting against the amatonormative current. And even if you kind of do, there are still many, many things that you will never experience as a cis straight person. For this reason, many of you only have your normative history to draw on. Even if your polyamory is your orientation rather than your choice, your most likely approach often ends up like Franklin Vo's in The Game Changer. Oh my gosh. I mean, you remember, it was years, or even, you know, even having decades of all these relationships built on the idea of monogamy plus one. What do I mean by that exactly? I keep using this term, but... Okay, so monogamy plus one is the reason the non-monogamous communities even have terms like hierarchy, secondary, tertiary, polyfidelity, etc. And the reason particular non-monogamies like relationship anarchy, solo polyamory, relationship fluid, and others have appeared as a way to push back against it. There even exists out there a secondary's bill of relationship rights. And if, I mean, if you don't understand why, like, the need for that is awful in itself, then you got a ways to go. It's okay. You will get there. But let's break it down. Anyway, so I'm not saying that being a secondary or wanting a polyfidelitous relationship is wrong or worse somehow. Just that it took so much pain, anguish, jealousy, guilt, and mistakes to get to the point where the community is finally openly discussing how these attitudes can actually be abusive, divisive, and harmful in other ways. Because much of straight, cis, well-off monoculture is built upon the amatonormative arm of abuse culture in general, straight, cis people within poly-A communities tend to repeat the same mistakes, perpetuate the same systemic imbalances, and tread the same ground as people who are monogamous. But why would that bother queer poly-A people so much? I mean, you know, it's not like we invented the modern form of polyamory or anything. Well, actually, it's totally appropriative for cishets to claim poly-A as queerness. So much as Rachel Dolezal is given the side eye for claiming black ancestry, many queer people are wary of cishet people saying they are queer. It's rude, especially when you keep in mind that way before the ethical slut, there existed polyamory within the area we know as the United States. Ugh. I mean, it's not even... It's anyway, I'll get into the land issue later, but... there existed a polyamory that was queer and black and native and anarchic. Queer history is still not really taught widely, so you might not even realize that it was kinky, queer weirdos like myself who initially rejected the trappings of the white picket fence, marriage, and kids that culture forces down everyone's throats. It's not that none of us want those things. We simply found them on our own terms. The same went for our love lives. Why should we keep the same attitudes of the society that came in and oppressed us? Before the missionaries and the colonizers arrived, and still do arrive, many other nations and tribes were just, inherently non-monogamous, or at least it was part of the culture. Not much is known, because, as you may have noticed, the history of black people in any country, and any other indigenous people, and in addition to peoples who are isolated, even now, are often cited as, as examples of why non-monogamy is more quote-unquote natural, or to justify why it's okay to practice. You might not actually know that this is a bit of an insult. Non-monogamy, like much of culture in general, has now circled so far around that it has to be reintroduced to the types of people who had been doing it all along and were punished for it. I raise my eyebrows at all of this because that is some next level Columbusing right there. It's so bad even to the point that Elizabeth Scheff, who's supposed to be like the foremost expert, who is actually not non-monogamous, but studying, how we live our lives, has just completely ignored everything I've said on the subject about, this used to be my people's and, and other indigenous peoples and things like that. Like, you're bringing it around. Yes, white people may have started calling it something different or whatever, but it's nothing new. But, even she made the mistake of writing about black people in polyamory and non-monogamy as if none of our people had ever practiced it before, as if our people hadn't laid the groundwork for it. And that's really horrible. And it just goes to show how much information is missing from these narratives. It's a shame. We're missing that foundation. And that's why queer history and black history is so freaking important. Anyway, all of that aside, if you happen to be cishet and you happen to understand the history of non-monogamy and you are sensitive to your queer friends, can't you still claim queerness in the name of solidarity? I mean, it's not like with Dolezal, right? Unlike acting or pretending to be black, you can absolutely participate in queer acts. And that's okay. So, pretending to be black is obviously, a huge fucking problem. But being queer, there are acts and there's identity. All right, so we're going to explain why there's still a problem with that, because queer acts does not an identity make. While people of any orientation whatsoever can certainly behave queerly, there's still a really important distinction. Queer acts are not the same as queer identities. And you would see this because before we had all of these terms, these identity terms, before we thought, before there was this school of thought on our desires and actions being identity-based, it just was. And it wasn't an issue. We didn't have to, really separate and define it. We just were ourselves, and we were with who we wanted to be with in ways that, hopefully were healthy and culturally, supported and things. And it was a lot. Wasn't always, perfect. It wasn't some freaking utopia or anything, but for the most part, it was definitely healthier than after colonization. Just say it. So point is, queer acts are not the same as queer identities. So even if I were to behave as if I'm cis and straight, my identity would always be queer. Just as being with one gender or another does not erase queerness, it also doesn't validate queerness. It doesn't even matter if you are non-mono by predilection and not simply by choice. See, while my polyamory is my orientation too, it is based on my queer identity. meaning that by definition and existence, I am not, never will be, and do not seek to be normal. My identities create a unique shape upon which my interactions rest. There's something that cannot and will never change. My polyamorous nature grows out of my autism, my genderqueerness, my pansexuality, my noetosexuality, my other forms of queerness, and most notably, my aromanticism. It is inextricably tied to my many queer identities and experiences. And the reason that any of these things are my identity is because I am absolutely anti-normativity of anything. And, I mean, that's what queerness is about. It's not... You can be gay, you can be trans, you can be bi, or, you know, whatever. You can be any orientation and not be queer. Queerness is like, it's a stance that you take to not settle into complacency, to not let harmful systemic shit rest or stay as is. It is upsetting the status quo, you know, on purpose and just by existing. And... Yeah. So, I mean, if everybody under the rainbow can, you know, be what they are, not be queer, you know, it definitely means that you probably aren't either, especially if you're just, like, not actually pushing back against anything. I don't know. Anyway, so I don't know if it's going to be the same for other queer, disabled, POC, poly-A people. You know, that's for them to decide. And as I said, not even everyone in the LGBTQIA2S+ community is even queer. So, and also, there's even less of an overlap between the queer and cis populations, of course. So, while you may participate in queer events and acts like kink, non-monogamy, and some other things, I guarantee you have never, and will never, be oppressed because of it. We queers are still considered dangerous and deviant, specifically because we go against the status quo. And many of us exist at the intersections of disability, race, poverty, gender, and neurodivergence. That's important to keep in mind. Queer has a very specific definition. It is a very specific perspective, and it has a distinct history. Despite the inclusive ground it covers, it most likely will not ever cover a cishet person. Not even a poly-A one. Unless you are, like, maybe a relationship anarchist that just really, you know, pushes against, what are they? Pushes against the ways that society puts in hierarchies of people and who matters and who doesn't. And, you know, things like access, you know, accessibility and all of that. Yeah, you can't be changing anything if you don't change anything, basically. Anyway, yeah. Point is, most of you will never be oppressed for being non-monogamous like we are and have been. There's a reason it's more acceptable to be non-monogamous now, and it's mostly because the main stories are those of cishets like you. The rest of us have known all about this, you know, all the time. We pass down those stories to each other, but it's not mainstream. The queer stories have actually been washed away, considered too much to take in, and too transgressive. Like, for instance, I'm reading Quali Driscoll's book about, being two-spirit. And it's just ridiculous, like, the ways, you know, all these stories just go missing, trying to find that connection and go back and build that full history, because... Obviously, without, you know, being able to access the people who have these stories, you know, it can just get cut off. But we have to make sure we keep passing it on. It's always going to be in danger because it's not mainstream, because it's not widely supported. You know, it's the underground, underground stories in a way. So, all that to say... You're not doing us any favors by saying that you're one of us. Especially if the politics and privilege of your desires have never even been fully examined, altered, or decolonized. But don't fret. You can certainly still support your queer poly-A family and friends. Be inclusive of us. Acknowledge our history. And please, do not participate in Columbusing We get a lot of that in all the other areas of our lives already. You can take your proper place as an accomplice, learning from us instead of leaving us behind. You can appreciate us without obscuring our identity by claiming it. And when you're ready to extricate yourself fully from the norm, then, you know, maybe we'll reconsider that. So, thanks for listening and, you know, food for thought. As always, feel free to send me your thoughts and questions, and I'll see about answering them. If you like what you're hearing and want to directly support me, there are now subscription options, monthly subscription options. So, you know, sign up. And if you do, you might just find yourself with access to the Metanoic portal for free. Hey, that sounds pretty sweet to me. So, go ahead, try it out.